Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News for Saturday and Sunday, the weekend edition, May 3rd and 4th of 2025. We'll start today on the front page with the headline, May Day. Area residents march to commemorate workers. Brought to us by reporter Kayla White. A group of protesters marched to several sites in downtown Danville Thursday, May 1st, as part of May Day celebrations. Protesters demanded protections for union workers, freedom of speech, women's rights, civil rights, and due process, among other things. May Day celebrations around the world took place Thursday as a way to celebrate and commemorate the lives of workers lost, demanding fair pay in various labor movements. Diana Frazier, one of the organizers of the protest in Danville, said she had hoped more people would come out and make their voice heard. At each stop, Frazier and Jermaine Light, another organizer, would give a speech about various demands they were making. The march began at the Social Security office in Danville. Today, politicians like to refer to Social Security as an entitlement, when in reality we pay into these benefits all our working life. This money is ours, Light said. She went on to cite the NPR, saying Elon Musk wants to reduce the Social Security workforce by 12%, with over 2,500 former employees taking an early retirement. Not only will this affect these federal workers' lives and security, but it is possible that it could mean delays in processing and delivery of much-needed benefits and those attempting to access services, Light said. At the Workers' Memorial in Danville, Frazier told the story of the Haymarket affair when the peaceful protest turned violent after a bomb was thrown, causing police to open fire in the crowd. Today, we're still marching for workers' rights because many in power are intent on taking union rights away, Frazier said. In late March, Trump signed an executive order taking away the power of union workers employed by the federal government to collectively bargain, according to the Associated Press. One area resident who previously voted for Trump says he changed his mind when he saw Trump working against union rights. I voted for Trump the first time, Dalton Stelzer, 25, said, adding that his family are largely Trump supporters, so their influence his choice. I didn't have my own opinion. I voted for the opinions around me. That changed, he said, when he joined the IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and later began dating his girlfriend, Gabriella Booth, whose father is also with the union. She helped me get a little more educated about it for my own opinion, and then being in the union, of course, I've done a lot of research into which side supports and which side doesn't support union workers, Stelzer said. Some of my best friends, some of my own family, still support him to this day. And I'm scared to have kids in this world with these people that just have no heart and only care about themselves. They can't see anything other than their small world around them, Booth said, and that frightens me to death for myself and my children. The group also marched in support of the U.S. Post Office, gathering outside the office in Danville while Frazier and Light gave speeches. We have been told over and over that the Postal Service cannot continue to operate as a government entity, Light said. The truth of the matter is that the post office is not supported by tax dollars. It generates its own revenue. Light went on to tell protesters that Trump plans to get rid of the USPS by making it part of the Commerce Department or privatizing it, which would mean a loss of 600,000 jobs across the nation, a fact backed by the Associated Press. At the Women's Memorial, Frazier spoke about the contributions women have made throughout the nation's history, referencing such women as First Ladies Eleanor Roosevelt and Abigail Adams, who championed women's rights. Many women were contributing to the war effort by stepping up to work in traditional male roles. We've seen this depiction in Rosie the Riveter, Frazier said. These women kept our country working and single-handedly kept their families going. Women's contributions to the founding of our country and the advances women have championed throughout our history can never be erased, no matter how hard the Trump regime tries, Frazier added, referencing the overthrowing of Roe v. Wade, giving states the right to ban abortions. One protester carried a flagpole with the U.S. flag upside down, an apolitical universal signal of distress originally used by sailors to signal their ship was in trouble. When asked why she was flying the flag upside down, protester Lisa Long said it was because of the people who are unable to march for their rights. I'm here to show up for people who can't. Like I was telling the guy back there, he said, well, I can't walk. And I said, okay, go get in your car and drive around and honk for us, Long said. This town used to be a beautiful place to be, Long said. We had GM. We had Kaiser. People here had a great life because there was great power with unions standing up. And then along the way, we became a warehouse city. Long also believes communication between members of both parties could help change things for the better. I'm just here to get people talking, because if we start talking, we're going to find out we're not so different. We all want the same things, Long said. While standing outside the Danville Public Library, the group demanded protections for the freedom of speech and free press. We were given a democratic republic. We were promised life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in 1775, no longer at the mercy of the whims and cruelties of a king. The highest law in our land is the Constitution, Light read as protesters listened outside the Danville Public Library. Now these rights are being violated, she continued. Books are being banned. The banning of books is nothing new. Nazis burned books that were written by Jews, communists, socialists, anarchists, liberals, pacifists, and even books written by Albert Einstein. Light also spoke about the importance of free press, citing Thomas Jefferson as saying, "Were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I would not hesitate to prefer the latter." Journalists are being excluded from press briefings at the White House because Trump does not like what they say or what they write, Light said. Many sources of news are now acquiescing to Trump in the name of profit. We must fight because this government is for the people and by the people, and we're the people. Continuing with local news, Project Success expands in school summer programming, violence prevention, video production, among offerings. Again by Kayla White. Project Success has expanded its before and after school programming to more schools throughout Vermilion County, thanks to new grants from the Illinois State Board of Education and the Illinois Criminal Justice Authority. The organization offers after-school and summer programming to help empower area children and families to achieve their highest potential, according to the organization's website. Among the programs offered at 21 schools and 6 school districts across the county, the organization provides academic assistance, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, art, cooking clubs, credit recovery, service learning, social-emotional learning supports, and more. In March, the organization was able to reopen its after-school and summer programs at 6 schools across the county where the organization had previously lost funding, according to Kimberly David, CEO of Project Success. Programs were reopened at Mead Park Elementary, also serving Mark Denman students, South View Upper Elementary, North Ridge Middle School, Westville High School, Oakwood Grade School, and Oakwood High School. Among the new programming offered is an increase in violence prevention programming at the after-school programs in Danville schools, said Jamie Neitlinger, director of the programming. The violence prevention programming aims to cultivate a positive, inclusive environment by equipping the students with empathy, conflict resolution skills, and respect for diversity, while also providing them with strategy for managing their emotions, resolving disagreements in a peaceful manner, and becoming active bystanders, Neitlinger said. The goal is to help students notice the warning signs that someone is about to become violent, such as withdrawing or lashing out or generally behaving differently than they normally do. We hope that if we can increase the awareness of the warning signs and make strong connections between the students and the adults, we hope that we're able to empower the students to seek support, Neitlinger said. There are also teaching students to notice warning signs within themselves that self-harm may occur, Neitlinger said. We're teaching them to figure out what works for them, whether it be exercise or music or breathing exercises, taking some kind of brain break to get your mind off of it, she said, and recognizing when they feel like they're going to spiral and kind of being proactive and letting somebody know, hey, I'm not okay right now. Another key skill students are learning is the ability to discern when the real threat is happening. We teach the kids the difference between making a report because something unsafe is going on, as opposed to tattling when a behavior might be occurring that isn't a threat, Neitlinger said. The new programming includes future planning and goal setting for students, as well as offering supports for students and families that have been affected by violence. The supports include quarterly educational family events, a parent support group for those affected by violence, and daily contact between parent mentors and families to help connect them to community resources. They'll be calling families more often, seeing if there's any resources they need, and seeing how they can help, and connecting them to Vermilion County resources, David said. Depending on funding sources, Project Success summer programming will be offered during summer break at schools all across the county for between 4 weeks and the entire break, David said. We're able to go all summer in Danville this year. We haven't done that in the past with all Danville schools. David said, we have some really, really cool things coming up. Among those cool offerings includes Say It With Music, a music summer camp where students will learn to produce a music video, David said. It's going to explore with the kids how music can affect us emotionally in a negative or in a positive way, Neitlinger said. It will be a heavy focus on kids who resonate with that coping skill, giving them a space to learn how to create the music, and then they'll end up doing a music video at the end of it. To learn more about Project Success or to enroll your child, check out their website at vcprojectsuccess.org. Here's some news for those of you that are going to be out and about on our roads this week. Road closure to Vermilion and Hazel Street begins on Monday. A road closure between North Vermilion and Hazel Streets will impact travel beginning Monday. The City of Danville has announced the complete lane closure on a portion of the westbound lane on North Street between North Vermilion and Hazel Street starting Monday morning, May 5th, and lasting until approximately 4 p.m. on Friday, May 9th. A utility contractor has informed the city they'll be repairing the utility duct bank at the northeast corner of North Vermilion and North Streets. This closure will impact motorists traveling westbound on North Street, and all eastbound motorists will not be impacted. Detour signage has been placed to detour motorists around the lane closure. Motorists and pedestrians are urged to use caution while traveling near the roadway closure corridor. Here's a local anniversary that may be of interest to you. Central Illinois Natural Health Clinic celebrates 20th anniversary with a new location. Central Illinois Natural Health Clinic, a cornerstone of holistic health care in the region since 2005, proudly announces the celebration of its 20th anniversary this May. Coinciding with this milestone, the clinic will relocate from its longtime home at 1012 West Fairchild Street to 800 Oak Street in Danville. Founded with a mission to provide integrative and natural health solutions to the community, Central Illinois Natural Health Clinic has served thousands of Central Illinois residents over the past two decades. 20 years ago, we opened our doors with a vision of bringing holistic health options to Danville and the surrounding communities, said Andrew Peters, DCND, founder and the director of the clinic. Today, we're thrilled to not only celebrate this milestone anniversary, but also to announce our move into a new facility that will allow us to better serve our patients for the years to come. The new location at 800 Oak Street is housed within Allume Counseling and Wellness Center. The facility will continue to offer the clinic's signature services, including naturopathic medicine, nutritional counseling, and gentle chiropractic care. The clinic will complete its transition to the new location by May 12th, with no interruption in patient services anticipated during the move. In Urbana, Dr. Peters will continue to see patients at their facility at 302 West Elm Street. For more information about Central Illinois Natural Health Clinic services, contact Dr. Andrew Peters at 217-443-4372 or visit www.illinoisnaturalhealth.com. Turning our attention to some community briefs, vendor market set for May 3rd, which has already occurred. Catlin-wide rummage sale. Let's start with that one. The Catlin Historical Society is sponsoring a citywide rummage sale on Saturday, June 7th. To have your sale listed on the city map, a $5 fee is to be paid at sign-up. Forms for sign-up will be available at the museum, post office, village hall, floral and flair, and the Catlin Library. The museum will place advertising for participants in the area newspapers and posters throughout neighboring towns. The museum will accept donations for its sale beginning May 7th, with the proceeds going to the Catlin Historical Society. No building materials, mattresses, or large items will be accepted. If questionable, please call the museum. The deadline for sign-up forms and rummage donations are Wednesday, June 4th, and maps will be available on sale morning at 7 a.m. at the museum. If you have questions or need more information, call 217-427-5766. Let's try that again. 217-427-5766. Festival Chorus to have concert. The Vermilion Festival Chorus will present an afternoon on Broadway, Saturday, May 10th at 3 p.m. at St. James United Methodist Church. The concert features selections from popular Broadway musicals. Admission is free and donations are welcome, with a portion of the donations going to Fairhope Children's Ministry. The Vermilion Festival Chorus is directed by Dave Schroeder and accompanied by Jill Smith. Well, before we take a break here at the midpoint of our time together, let's take a second and celebrate with BHRA as they raise funds for OSF Cancer Center. The BHRA Student Council presented a check for $4,184 and 75 cents to Dr. Labayong and the OSF Cancer Center from the group's Cancer Night hosted in February. The Student Council organized a bake sale, basket raffle, 50-50 drawing, and many other activities to raise the funds. Student Council would like to thank all those who donated and worked to make the event such a success. Well, congratulations, students. Let's turn our attention to the death notices that had been received by the paper as of Friday at 5 p.m. We have just one at this time, Pastor James Blue. Pastor James Jim Blue, 80, of Georgetown, formerly of Olivet, passed from this life into the loving arms of his Lord and Savior on Monday, April 28th. A celebration of Jim's life will be held on 10:30 a.m., Monday, May 5th, at Sunset Funeral Home at 3940 North Vermilion in Danville. Donations may be given in his honor to the Brother Blue Memorial Fund. Well, it's been a couple of weeks since we've read from Kevin Cullen's column, The Irish Hiker. So let's give him an opportunity today. Today, his column is titled, A Trip Down Memory Lane. Never put off until tomorrow that which you should have done in the 1970s. That's advice from me, the wise, deep, worldly philosopher. What in the heck am I talking about? Newspaper clippings, that's what. Ever since I started stripping forests of ancient trees, evicting birds from their nests, and filling the world with newsprint, I have filled cardboard boxes with the pages that contain my stories. Many should never have been saved, but they were anyway. If you're a newspaper reporter, you see each story is a little miracle, a unique creation. It's your baby, and yet unrecognized masterpiece. And of course, each is a leaf on the tree of your life, a personal experience frozen and potentially relivable. In my case, this has gone on for 49 years. First stories from my college newspaper, then three daily papers in three states and a weekly. I retired in 2016, but freelance writing has continued, hence even more newspaper pages with stories. The boxes just kept multiplying, but nothing has ever been filed or categorized. In fact, the stories were never clipped. People would ask me if I could send them a copy of some story that they remember from, as they put it, oh, I don't know, maybe 20 or 25 years ago, and my answer always remains the same. I probably have it, but I have no idea where it is. They seem deflated, as if I just knew I had like these index scrapbooks, but didn't want to help them. Each January 1st, I would make a New Year's vow to finally take action. In my dreams, I'd open each box, throw away the pages that contained routine day-in, day-out stuff, and clip the good stories. Simple. About 2 weeks ago, I was in the basement, looking at six big boxes of slowly yellowing newspaper pages. I opened one and was surprised to find some stories that I wrote during that mind-boggling winter snowstorm of 1978. What news? I've never seen anything comparable. We couldn't get the newspaper delivered for several days, but we still published them to document the event and, by the way, fulfilled advertising contracts. Anyway, that's when I said to myself, that's it. Today's the day. It took all afternoon to go through the first box, but it felt good. I carried that box upstairs and I started. Before long, I had a pile of pages on the floor ready for disposal and a pile of dated clippings. My scissors were going crazy. If a story jumped to another page, I even paperclipped the two parts together. Next box! On and on I went, reliving a lot of tedious meetings, fires and police calls, but remembering an awful lot of interesting people who shared their lives, passions, triumphs, and tragedies with me. Like every other newspaper reporter, I've covered some memorable stuff. Those were the stories that I simply couldn't throw away. Instead, I reread them. A few tears flowed, recalling the little kids with terminal illnesses and the factory workers who lost their jobs. I was inspired once again by brave souls filing for public office, launching iffy businesses, saving landmarks, and giving the city council and the school board holy hell. Time and again, I felt fortunate to have such a fascinating job, with so much freedom, so much support, and so many opportunities to experience life and share it with others. Yesterday, I emptied the last box and took the last pile to the recycling bin. Now every saved clipping is in a neat plastic box, each box labeled by newspaper. I still won't be able to quickly find a given story, but at least I'll know where to look. The project reminds me of something that the great journalist H.L. Mencken wrote decades ago. He had stumbled into a packet of stories that he'd written as a young man. Their insight and style surprised him. He compared it to meeting a fair one from 1902 and finding her still slim and sweet, with jet black hair and eyes like gasoline pools on wet asphalt. I know the feeling. Again, our column today from Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker. We usually run way out of time before we get to spend any of it with sports. So in addition to the Irish hiker, I thought we'd spend some time in the sports section today. In prep softball, the headline is Streak Snapped, Timely Hitting Propels Storm Past Tigers in VVC Softball by journalist Chad Dare. Dateline Westville. There's an old adage that all good things must come to an end. The Westville Tigers softball team saw its 47-game conference winning streak snapped on Friday afternoon with a 4-3 loss to the Salt Fork Storm. I knew they have been conference champions for a lot of years, and year after year, they've had an amazing team, said Salt Fork senior Alexa Jamison, who was in the sixth grade the last time Westville lost a Vermilion Valley Conference softball game. I'm friends with a lot of the girls at Westville, and I know they have a great softball team. We just treated this game like every other game. We had to come in relaxed and play the game that we've been playing all year, but it actually took a little more from the Storm, 18-3 overall and 7-0 in the VVC. Salt Fork needed a pair of two-out runs, run-scoring hits from sophomore Morgan Russell to score three of her team's four runs, including what eventually became the game-winning two-run single in the fifth inning. We knew that we could win the game, we just had to come up with some timely hits, something we've been struggling with at times this season, Salt Fork coach Kaylin Leonard said. We came through today. Morgan came up clutch in both the first inning and especially in the fifth. Even trailing 4-0 heading into the bottom of the seventh, Westville first-year coach Brandon Zayer believed his Tigers could mount a comeback for the victory. The Tigers, 22-3 overall and 7-1 in the VVC, loaded the bases with one out on singles by Jasmine Bennett and Layla Cook, along with the Laney Godzer walk. With the tying run at the plate, Salt Fork's Carly McGee got Lily Kiesel to pop out for the second out and was one pitch from a shutout when Layla Atwood cleared the bases with a three-run double to right. I was glad to see our girls being resilient in the seventh inning, Zayler said. We finally got a clutch hit, but it wasn't quite enough. With more softball news, the Lady Jaguars claim conference crown. DACC opens postseason play against Heartland, again by Chad Dare. Entering the final week of the regular season, the Danville Area Community College Lady Jaguars had an opportunity for a pair of major accomplishments. After splitting with Illinois Central College and Parkland College in softball, DAC claimed their first conference title since 1988, but came one game short of securing the top seed in the Region 24 tournament. How did this happen? Illinois Central is not part of the Midwest Athletic Conference for softball, but games against the Cougars do count in the Region 24 standings. We were all separated by one game, said DAC coach Matt Cervantes. If we would have swept Parkland in the final doubleheader, we would have gotten both the conference title and the number one seed. Instead, Parkland earned the number one seed with a 19-5 region record. Illinois Central is seeded number two, also with a 19-5 region record, while DAC is the third seed with an 18-6 record in the region. So this weekend, the Jaguars travel to the Tome Field in East Peoria for the Region 24B tournament. DAC opens against Heartland Community College at noon on Saturday, with the winner facing Illinois Central at 3 p.m. Parkland is hosting the Region 24A tournament against Lincolnland and Lewis and Clark. Both tournaments are double elimination, with the winner advancing to the Central District Tournament May 12th and 13th at a site to be determined. The Lady Jaguars, 32-11, won 15 of their final 17 games in region play after starting just 3-4. Does Cervantes regret the slow start? No. I think everything our squad, our team went through was for a reason, he said. One thing that this group does is that they fight, and they're resilient in every facet. I don't look back and think, what if? I look forward, and I'm thankful we have an opportunity this weekend. That's the same mindset that my girls are taking this weekend. We've been playing some of our best softball here at the end of the regular season. We've been putting all the pieces together. This group likes to run to challenges, and they want to play the best people. DAC split with Heartland Community College and Illinois Central during the regular season. We actually won or tied every series in conference play, Cervantes said. We were the outright MWAC champions because we won 3 out of 4 against Parkland. We've also beaten every pitcher in our region. So while we have to go through some stiff competition, this team isn't going to shy away from that. Well, let's run through the local roundup of scores in baseball. Looks like the Westville team made the battle for the Vermilion Valley Conference lead the easy one, as they were able to beat. Oh, I'm sorry. Cameron Steinbaugh had a home run with 4 RBIs as the Tigers beat Salt Fork 12-2 in 6 innings on Friday. Other scores included Hoopston Area 8 and Schlarman 2, Normal West 11, Danville 0, BHRA 8, Milford 4, Oakwood 17, Cisna Park 0, Watsika 4, GRFC 3, Iroquois West 7, AP Armstrong Potomac 4, Lebanon 8, Mountain Central 6, Duggar Union 12, North Vermilion 4, South Vermilion 10, Seeger 1, and in prep softball, Oakwood Schlarman 16, Chrisman 0, BHRA 8, Milford 3, Watsika 14, Georgetown Ridge Farm 3, Armstrong Potomac 13, Iroquois West 3, Normal 9, Danville 1, Covington 12, Fountain Central 3, Seeger 6, South Vermilion 5, and in prep boys track, Danville was second at the invite, at the Champaign Central invite at Friday's Gene Ward Invitational. We have a few minutes left to look at what's going on in our state. Today from the Capitol, Duckworth and Durbin reintroduced the Equality Act to ban discrimination against LGBTQ plus Americans. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth and U.S. Senate Democratic Whip Dick Durbin, both from Illinois, joined U.S. Senators Jeff Merkley, Tammy Baldwin, Cory Booker, and Congressional Equality Caucus Chair Rep. Mark Takano for the reintroduction of the Equality Act in an effort to push back against escalated attacks from the Trump administration, MAGA Republicans, and state legislators on the rights and freedoms of LGBTQ Americans nationwide. It's absolutely unacceptable that someone can be fired from their job, evicted from their home, and experience discrimination just because of who they are or who they love, Duckworth said. As Trump continues his dangerous anti-LGBTQ plus attacks, and we see a growing wave of legislation targeting the LGBTQ plus community across the country, we must protect their rights at the federal level. I'm proud to join Senator Durbin and my colleagues in reintroducing the Equality Act to finally enshrine critical civil rights protections for LGBTQ plus Americans in federal law. No one should be treated less than equal because of who they love or who they are. While we've given big steps in the fight for equality for the LGBTQ plus community, Republican-led state legislatures and the Trump administration are relentlessly attacking the rights and humanity of LGBTQ plus Americans. We must act, said Durbin. I'm joining my colleagues in introducing the Equality Act to ensure that LGBTQ plus Americans are fully and explicitly protected under our nation's civil rights laws. In states across the country, over 850 anti-LGBTQ plus bills have been filed so far this year, the most in U.S. history. The Equality Act is historic, comprehensive legislation to ensure and enshrine civil right protections for our LGBTQ plus friends and neighbors in federal law. The Equality Act amends landmark federal anti-discrimination laws to explicitly add sexual orientation and gender identity to longstanding bans on discrimination in employment, housing, public accommodations, jury service, access to credit, federal funding, and more. It would also add protections against sex discrimination and parts of the anti-discrimination laws where these protections have not been included previously, such as public accommodations and federal funding. Well, let's take a peek at our weather as we end together our time together today. Looks like Monday is going to be raining, which you probably already know, but the rest of the week looks warmer with clouds and sun. Highs in the lower 70s and lows in right around 50 degrees. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News, the weekend edition for May 3rd and 4th. I look forward to reading again with you soon. Have a great week.